You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Lacrosse Boots. Lacrosse Alpha Burley Pro delivers an athletic and glove-like fit that will hold the foot in place to prevent chafing and rubbing while on the move. Featuring hand-laid premium rubber over cushioning neoprene, Lacrosse Alpha Burley Pro boots are comfortable, durable, hunt after hunt, and season after season. For more information, visit lacrossefootwear.com. Lacrosse Boots. Done right since 1897.
Hey, how's everybody doing today? Welcome back to the Rookies in the Backcountry podcast. Before we get the show going here, I just wanted to invite everybody over to the Backcountry Rookies group page, which is on Facebook. It's just a page I'm putting together over there so we can have chats and conversations and sort of a blog style of a platform where we can all just talk and ask questions and, you know, provide information and stuff. Pretty cool. Go check it out. Backcountry Rookies group page. And then also just wanted to remind everybody, send me your hunting stories for this 2018 season. Prefer the backcountry style mule deer or elk hunts. Best way to do it is just write it up. You can email me at jcr@backcountryrookies.com, or you can go to the webpage, backcountryrookies.com, and you can do a contact form at the bottom, submit it. So, cool. Today we've got Adam Parr from Transition Wild. Really good show, full of lots of information. So stick around and enjoy. Okay, welcome to the Rookies in the Backcountry, everybody. Today's going to be a really cool show because this is my first collaboration that I want to do with the other members of the Sportsman's Nation Network. I've got Adam Parr today from Transition Wild, and Adam has recently put out a hunting guide, his 2018 Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide, and I think this is going to be perfect to kind of match up and sync with the Rookies in the Backcountry concept. So I'm going to let Adam introduce himself, and then we're going to dig into this guide and some other things that I think will be helpful. So Adam, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Well, Chad, thanks for having me on the show. It's always great when we can get Sportsman's Nation guys together on the show. And obviously this is our first time being able to chat with each other. And that's the cool thing about this is that, you know, you get to meet so many cool people and just talk hunting. And when you're all passionate about the same thing, that's where the magic happens, as you know. So, as you mentioned, I recently have put together a guide on my website, and it really just kind of gets people started. If they're completely new to elk hunting, or even if you've had a few years of experience, you'll definitely pull some things from the guide. But, you know, it's a 10-page resource PDF that I've put together that just kind of walks you through everything from, you know, where to hunt, determining what kind of hunting style you want to go through, to gear selection and physical preparation, and just a lot of good kind of resources as far as scouting for elk digitally and, you know, boots on the ground. Gear list, you know, all sorts of different things that kind of get you started, and some other episodes that I've recorded on the podcast and articles that I've written. Just I'm dumping out all the knowledge that I've learned over the past couple seasons to kind of help people get started with elk hunting, whether it's Colorado or not. You know, everything's based on, you know, around Colorado because that's where I'm at and that's what I know. But, you know, you can apply a lot of these things to any Western hunt. So that's, yeah, it's kind of what I've been working on lately. So hopefully people are liking it.
Cool. Well, I know I am. So I've been digging through your website and watching a lot of your videos and reading some of your articles. Before we dig into the hunters or the elk hunting guide, where did Transition Wild come from? And let's talk a little bit about your background. And I know you're not from Colorado originally, right?
Yeah, I'm actually from Michigan, grew up there. So, yeah, if we want to touch on that a little bit, and then I'll kind of bring in the transition wild thing. So I grew up in Michigan. You know, I started shooting a bow probably really early on, probably 8, 9 years old. You know, nothing serious, but you know, your dad buys you a bow and you shoot at a target in the yard and that's it. But I kind of really got serious into it when I was more, I don't know, I think 11 years old. My dad bought it was a $100 Golden Eagle bow at a garage sale, and it came with arrows and a case and, you know, release and everything that I needed to really get started. And so I began shooting that. I couldn't start hunting in Michigan legally until I was 12 at the time. Now it's been reduced. You can start hunting at 10. But I started hunting at 12, and it took me a few years to get started. And that was just going after white-tailed deer, sitting in a tree stand and just kind of getting my feet wet. Kind of took me a few years to actually put one on the ground. But I started bow hunting, you know, early on. And, you know, as I got into college, I started hunting out of state. So started taking some trips to Ohio. And then I started going after Kansas and most recently Iowa. So you start kind of branching out in the whitetail world. And then, let's see, in 2015, well, it would have been late 2014, I decided at the time I wanted to move out to Colorado. And it was always a place that I envisioned. If I moved anywhere from Michigan, it would be Colorado. And I just kind of put some thoughts together, and I was like, this is something I really want to do. So, you know, just kind of dropped everything I had, quit my job, sold my house, sold a lot of my belongings, and started interviewing for jobs out in Colorado. And in 2015, I finally made the move, and, you know, here I am today. So that's kind of the transition. And shortly after I moved out, I'd always wanted to kind of start a website and a blog, and really just to kind of document my own adventures. But when I lived in Michigan, I just felt like, you know, with whitetail hunting, what else can you add? Not necessarily. I mean, I just wasn't that passionate about it, I guess, at the time, because I'd done it for so long. But when I moved to Colorado and kind of immersed myself in this landscape of elk hunting and mule deer and just a whole new terrain, it really kind of got my wheels spinning. It was like, here's something that I can kind of showcase along the way and let people learn from what I'm doing, and to journal some of my hunts and experiences so I can go back and look on that, you know, when I'm older. But so yeah, I started that really to showcase my transition, so to speak, from a whitetail hunter to now an elk hunter in Colorado. So a lot of what the content that I try to produce is kind of, you know, the cross between the two, and you know, showcasing my successes, but more importantly the failures, because that's where you learn the most. And you know, so that's how it really got started and where I'm at today.
So did you use those lessons learned and those failures to build your elk hunting guide?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I was pretty fortunate. My very first year of elk hunting, actually my very first week, I killed a bull in Colorado with my bow. I got lucky, I'll admit that. But, you know, I had basically, I knew one of my buddies, his dad had a place in Colorado, and he knew that landscape well. And so that's kind of my starting point, where I kind of learned everything and just kind of immersed myself in that situation. But, you know, I didn't really know anything to start. And, you know, I was pretty fortunate to be able to kill a bull my very first week of elk hunting ever. But then last year, I had so many close calls and so many close encounters, and I couldn't get it done. But I learned more last year than I did my very first year, even though I killed a bull. You know, the amount of failures and the misses and the, you know, blown opportunities, that's where I really felt like I had you know, kind of learned about these animals and just learned the landscape altogether. So it's been a cool 2 years, and this will be my third season elk hunting here in Colorado. So I'm looking forward to just kind of taking what I've learned and hopefully capitalizing this year again.
So that first year, were you backpack hunting or like truck hunting off the roads, or what was that? Tell me that story.
Yeah. So, as I mentioned, my buddy's dad has a cabin, in Colorado where we hunt, and it's a pretty sweet spot because it's private land, but we don't hunt on the private. It's just a very small chunk that backs up to national forest. So we kind of use that as a base camp, and that's actually where, Dan Johnson, you know, the founder of Sportsman's Nation and Nine Finger Chronicles, he's going to come out and hunt with me this year at that spot. But so we were staying in a cabin. It's very rustic, you know, no electricity, you know, that type of thing. And we're using that as a base camp and kind of going from there. It's definitely an advantage because you get to come home to a bed at night, which is nice. But then last year I got into more of the backpack, you know, camping style and going from there. So it's a little bit of both. And then I also hunt from town, you know, like I'll stay at my house or my buddy's house, and then we'll just drive an hour and go into these places too. So I kind of do a mix of everything. You know, there's no one way to kill an elk, and you don't always have to go 5 miles deep with a, you know, backpack and everything on your back. You can kill elk 300 yards off the road, or, you know, 5 miles in, however you want to do it.
I like that. That's a good statement. There's more than one way to kill an elk. So,
for sure.
Lots of different ways to do it. And I think that's a good way to kind of segue into your hunting style and your elk hunter guide. So, let's start digging into that a little bit. So you have your elk hunter guide is broken out into six different topics, and that you know, those are your most important topics that you have. You have hunting style, where to hunt, when to hunt, important gear, physical preparation and tools and resources. So talk about the hunting style. Like, how did you come up with that and those different subtopics of the hunting style?
Yeah. So, you know, first part of the hunting guide is really just evaluating, you know, your own capabilities and maybe what experience or expectations you are looking for on an elk hunt. So, you know, I kind of break it down. Like, if you're not the guy who's in the best shape in the world, or, you know, not looking to go 5 miles deep in the backcountry because maybe you have a, you know, a knee injury or something, maybe you shouldn't go 5 miles back in. Maybe you're better suited for, you know, a spike camp off the road and then hiking in from there. I also kind of break down, you know, if you're hunting coming from out of state and you live, let's say, in Pennsylvania and you're driving 20 hours, you know, Colorado's not the biggest landmass, but hey, if you are coming from out of state, you want to stick more towards the side of the state that, you know, is closer to where you live, because, I mean, you can add another 6 to 8 hours of driving, depending on where you end up going. So maybe you want to focus your efforts geographically due to your time constraints. I also kind of factor in, you know, budget. Like, do you have extra money to maybe do a wilderness hunt with an outfitter to pack you in on a horse? Or, you know, are you better suited to pinch some pennies and, you know, just go DIY on public land and, you know, all yourself? So and then I break it down, like, what are you looking as far as expectations? Are you looking to kill, you know, something more of a trophy class where you put in for points and maybe wait for a draw unit? Or are you just looking to, you know, any bull and maybe go over the counter that way? So it's really just evaluating your own capabilities, how much time you have, how much money you have to spend, and what experience you are after, because you can kill elk, like I said, you know, if you want that experience where you go up high and hunt way deep in and immerse yourself, you know, far away from roads, you can certainly do that. But you can also stay in a hotel or a cabin closer to town and hunt close to town. I mean, you can do it however. So I did really just kind of break it down and really start evaluating, you know, get your wheels turning and your mind thinking of, you know, what do I really want to get out of this hunt from a number of variables. So that's kind of where I start.
Yeah, and I think it's worth saying that you like I kind of did all of those without even thinking about it until I looked at how the way that you broke them down, right? So you look at your physical capabilities. I know that I'm in good shape. I can carry a pack. I can climb mountains. I can do all that stuff. And then the time restrictions, we really considered that. How many days do we have to hunt? Should we try to get all the way to like the northwestern side of Colorado, or should we stay down toward the southeastern side where it's closer to home? Over the counter versus getting an outfitter. Obviously there's a huge cost variable there. So I really that was pretty cool to after I started reading through your guide, I thought, wow, man, I put thought into each one of those without really thinking that I was thinking about them. So pretty cool to see them broke out that way. Yeah, so then your number two, you have where to hunt elk. So number one was your hunting style. Number two is where to hunt. Talk about how you broke down the where to hunt portion.
So after you've kind of determined, what you're after as far as your expectations, that's where you kind of get into more of the details of, where you're actually going to be hunting as far as what unit. Colorado is broken out into, I don't know how many hundreds of units, but I offer, for archery, for example, I link to a map in there that shows you all the over the counter either sex elk archery units in Colorado, and whether you're rifle hunting, you can find over the counter units map there as well. But you kind of start breaking down where you actually want to hunt, and then I get into linking to harvest statistics, so it'll link you right to last year's results and show you the odds and success rates of each unit. You can also call your hunt planner in Colorado or talk to some of these wildlife officers and some of these offices and gain intel that way. But it really kind of starts breaking down the numbers as far as, what's available to hunt if you're going to hunt over the counter or a draw, looking at the stats. And then from there, I break it down into digital scouting, because after you've determined where you're going to hunt and which unit, you really need to start breaking apart that area. And a video that's been pretty popular on my page, I think it's got like 13,000 downloads or views. A lot of people love it. It's called this Colorado Google Earth Digital Scouting for Elk in Colorado. And I show you these overlays that are provided by Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And these overlays go onto Google Earth, and they show you these ranges of where elk are at certain times of the year. So, for example, there's an overlay there that you can highlight on Google Earth, and it shows you the summer ranges of where elk are going to be. It also shows you wintering ranges. It shows you transition corridors. So there's all these overlays that you can use to your advantage to kind of get you started in the ballpark once you've determined where you're going to hunt. So, for example, if I'm looking to hunt early archery elk in August and September, I'm going to be focusing on some of those summer ranges, and it shows you exactly where that's at. Now, it's not going to be like, oh yeah, there's guaranteed to be elk there because there's a lot of variables, but it's going to give you a good idea of where to begin. And then from there, most recently, I've put together, it's not in the guide yet, but most recently, I've put together some further digital elk scouting videos that kind of break down, once you know where they're generally at, you can then finer tune it into, where they're at based on food, water, cover, topography, and I kind of show you how to pinpoint and break down even further from there. So again, it's starting with your units, locating where you're going to hunt, based on statistics and looking at the data, and then, getting started with digital scouting and breaking down those areas from a high level view, and then, kind of dissecting it from there.
Yeah, very cool. And so on your digital scouting video that you have on YouTube, I think you point people to the Hunting Fool website. Is that right? Is it Hunting Fool where you pulled the overlays from?
Yeah, that's where they have them hosted there. You might be able to find them somewhere else too, but yeah, you can download the the unit map overlay there. And then as far as the like species data, I pulled that off the Colorado Parks and Wildlife website itself. And in that video, I show you how to do all that and where to go to find that.
Okay, so cool. I will make sure that I link that in the show notes when I send this out. So
yeah,
cool. So I've seen those overlays and I have those on my Google Earth and they are really, really helpful because you think you're looking at a really nice spot and everything looks good. And then you click on the summer concentration area and it's everywhere except where you're looking at, you know?
So, yeah, exactly. Well, it can save you a lot of time. I mean, if you don't know and you haven't hunted that area before, it's kind of a crapshoot, but at least these overlays kind of give you a general idea where they're going to be. And yeah, like you said, you might've had a spot picked out, but you get on there and you're like, oh, you know, that's probably not where I should go. And honestly, I've talked to a lot of other people. Some of my buddies used these overlays last year. They went into an area completely blind and they ended up killing a sweet bull in that area just going off of those overlays. So, you know, they are very valuable.
That's good to hear because I've been kind of using those as a base. So it's good to know that they are, that they're updated and Colorado Parks and Wildlife keeps them up to date. So
for sure.
And you had mentioned earlier too about calling the Colorado Parks and Wildlife and talking to those guys. I did that too. And I think that was one of the more helpful things that I've done. They're super knowledgeable, easy to talk to. One thing that I recommend, and you may be able to back this up, is that if you do want to call the Parks and Wildlife, know what you're talking about when you call. Don't just call those guys and say, where can I kill an elk? It's better to say, this is the unit that I'm looking at. This is the area that I'm looking at. You know, I'm looking at this, there's a creek that runs through there. There's some such and such trail. And if they think that you've done your research, they're more than willing to help you. But I think if you just call and say, where can I kill an elk? They're probably going to tell you Idaho, not Colorado. So
yeah, quit wasting my time. Yeah, that's exactly it. You got to do a little bit of research and have a game plan kind of in place. And then they're going to give you more of the finer details like road access and, you know, what the numbers are like in that area, maybe the age class, hunting pressure. They might be able to kind of touch on that a little bit. And let's see, back in March, I recorded an episode with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Brad Gabrielski came on the show. It's episode number 12. And we touched on that where they have the hunt planners. You can call in and get a lot of good information as well. And I link that podcast episode in there so you can just click on it and, you know, hear not only about the hunt planners, but also kind of a lot of regulations and rules and, you know, the new draw system and point system in Colorado. So we kind of touch on all that.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. How about let's move on to your number three, which is when to hunt elk. So let's talk that.
Yeah. So the third part, you know, kind of after you've kind of figured out what unit and maybe what area specifically based on those overlays and kind of doing some further studying and talking to some of these hunt planners, you have to then determine, you know, when you want to hunt elk, whether it's, you know, for archery, for example, you can hunt late August, starting August 24th, 25th, or you can hunt the last week of September, you know, September 15th through the 25th, somewhere in there. And it can make a big difference. You know, for example, we're just talking archery right here, but it can make a big difference on, you know, your hunt itself. And again, it comes back to your expectations. If you want to hunt during the rut, you know, experience the screaming bulls and, you know, potentially hot rut action, maybe you want to push your hunt back towards more of the third week of September when the rut's kind of in full swing. If you're looking to hunt maybe over more water holes and maybe sitting meadows and you're not really up for run and gun chasing, maybe you want to hunt, you know, first week of September or, you know, that opening week, August. But there's also other considerations to factor too, such as like hunting pressure. What I've seen in Colorado from my last couple of years of hunting here, I see the most pressure the first week because obviously it's opening weekend and everyone's excited and you get a lot, you know, get a lot of hunting pressure that way. But you also get a lot of hunting pressure during the rut as well. So something to factor there. I personally, I like kind of the beginning of September hunt. So like maybe September 1st through the 9th, somewhere in there, just because you get a little bit of everything. You don't have near amount of hunting pressure. It's the week before muzzleloader season, so you're not dealing with them. And, you know, I've definitely got into bugling and, you know, kind of that pre-rut as well during that week. So, it's something to consider as far as timing, because there's a lot of factors involved there and what experience, again, that you want. When it comes to rifle season, you know, you want to look at if you're looking for over-the-counter rifle, there's four rifle seasons. The first and fourth are draw for elk. Second and third, you can get over-the-counter licenses for bull elk only in Colorado. So, you know, breaking that down, second season rifle in Colorado, you know, obviously it's the first over the counter season. You're going to have maybe a little less hunting pressure, or, you know, the bulls aren't going to be pushed around as much by then, but you're also dealing with hotter weather, you know, potentially. If you wait till third season in the beginning of November, it's, you know, definitely cooler temperatures. There might be some snow on the ground, but you also might get, you know, higher hunting pressure. So things to evaluate for both archery and rifle. But, you know, it kind of helps get the wheels spinning on when you want to hunt based on kind of expectations and maybe your physical preparation and maybe what gear you have. So I kind of break it down from all angles.
From your experience in that, let's say the early archery hunt, the late August, early September, how much does the temperature vary from 8,000 feet up into the 11,500, 12,000 range?
You know, I've noticed not a huge swing, but like it'll be usually five, maybe 10 degrees cooler, you know, going from, you know, 7,000, 8,000 up to 11 to 12. That's not as big a difference as compared to, you know, what you're getting into as far as early season versus, you know, the third week of September. So, you know, last year in Colorado, opening weekend archery, it was, you know, 85 degrees, which was brutally hot. But by the last weekend of season during third, fourth week of September, it was snowing, nasty, you know, cold. So, I mean, the variability of kind of the elevation during a certain time period is not going to be a huge difference, but the variability from beginning of season to the end of season is, and that's definitely something to consider, which kind of gets us into more of the gear side, which is the next part of the, you know, hunting guide itself.
Okay, well then let's roll right into gear. Number four on your list is important elk gear. Go ahead and hit that up.
Yeah, so, you know, obviously if you've been hunting for a while, whether it's whitetail or antelope or, you know, whatever, wherever you live, you're going to have majority of the gear that you actually need for elk hunting. You know, everyone's got boots, everyone's got, you know, obviously a bow, everyone's got hunting clothing. But, you know, when it comes to an elk hunt, especially in, you know, some of the rugged, you know, mountains that you get into that you find with a lot of public land in Colorado and in the over-the-counter units, you've got to have the right gear for select items. So boots, you know, everybody talks about boots being, you know, very important, which it is. I mean, it's the lifeblood of your elk hunt. I mean, if you don't have good boots, you know, you're not going to be able to wear your knee-high rubbers in the mountains. You can, but you're going to be miserable. I can assure that. Boots are everything. So I talk about that. I don't really, you know, as I develop this guide over the years, I'll break down more of, you know, gear reviews and what to look for. But basically what I state is that, you know, put away your rubber knee highs and spend, you know, $200, $300, $400 on a good pair of boots, because it's going to be, you know, the difference of whether or not you can sustain a week of hunting or whether you're going to go down with blisters. So I talk about that. And then as far as the next piece of gear item that's important, obviously, is your pack. You know, if you're doing more of a backcountry style hunt where you're going to be bringing in more gear, your tent, you know, food, lots of food, that stuff, you know, a pack is everything. And especially if you're going to be further back in, you need a pack that's going to be able to haul meat. So I talk about, you know, external frames and, you know, the versatility of those and just making sure you get that right. You know, so it talks about that. And then the last thing is more of the clothing side. Obviously, you can use the clothing that you have currently for whitetail hunting. But, you know, there are certain things that make a difference, especially in the mountains. You know, getting rid of the clothing that's cotton based and switching over to more of a merino or a polyester and something that's built to wick away moisture and to be able to handle extreme temperatures through a layering system, you're going to be much, much better off and you're going to be more comfortable, which is going to, you know, factor into a lot of things, not only for the physical side, but for your mental as well. If you're uncomfortable and you're miserable out there, for a week hunt, it's going to be a lot tougher to keep going and to keep in the game, if that makes sense. So boots, pack, and clothing, I kind of break those down because in my opinion, those are the most important gear items that you need, and you shouldn't skimp on for your first elk hunt.
Agreed. And I like what you said about being comfortable, and I think comfort is part of being confident too. So some people laugh and, you know, call people gear geeks or whatever. But if that helps you and it makes you feel comfortable, then I think it's an important piece. And when we
exactly.
When you talk about boots, that was kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around that, to spend a couple hundred bucks on a pair of boots. But honestly, the ones that I landed on, the ones I ended up with, they're so comfortable and they're so durable that I can tell I'm going to be wearing these things for 3 or 4 years. So when you kind of factor that in and you think of it that way, you know, you might spend $200-$300 on a pair of boots, but you're going to be able to wear them for years and they're going to hold up. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, the boots that I wore for the first couple seasons, you know, these Cabela's Mendel boots, they're a good crossover boot. So if you're a whitetail hunter, you know, they're a good elk hunting boot, but you can also wear them whitetail hunting as well. So, and they're only like a couple hundred bucks. So that's one of the items I kind of point out and link to in that article, you know, as a good boot that you can use for multiple purposes. Cause some of these boots are, you know, if you're early archery hunting, I mean, they're going to be geared more towards that and hiking. They're not going to be best for sitting in a stand, you know, let's say all day in the whitetail woods. So something to consider there too.
Right. And on this page, you have hyperlinks that go to that particular pair of boots and then the pack that you run, which is a Mystery Ranch Metcalf. And then you have a clothing guide too. And that clothing guide's pretty nice. It talks about some different layers that you wear. And we're going to get into that here shortly because I want to talk about some early, mid, and late season layers. But that's in there, so you can link to that and you can go to it and you can kind of see what Adam wears and what he's got going. So the next one you've got, and I think this one's super important, is getting in shape. That's your number five point, getting in shape. So hit that up. Let's talk about the importance of the physical fitness part.
Yeah, so, you know, that's obviously elk hunting in the mountains. It's something that most people aren't used to. When you factor in high elevation where there's less oxygen, you know, physical endurance of hiking miles and miles a day and carrying a heavy pack. I mean, it's just something that is completely different if you're just used to hunting out of a tree stand or, you know, walking a quarter mile in and setting up from there. So I'll be the first to admit I'm not like the biggest like fitness junkie and I'm in the gym all the time. I do hit the gym. I do run. I try to stay active, but I'm not like a gung ho, you know, Cameron Haynes style. I love Cameron Haynes. He's awesome. Very inspiring. That's, I don't know. It's just not me. I can't I can't be in the gym all the time. I mean, I can, but I just choose not to, obviously. So I kind of illustrate from the point that, you know, hey, you don't have to be, you know, this super athlete to hunt elk, but at the same time, you've got to take into consideration where you're going to be hunting and prepare physically for that. So I talk about, you know, an article in there that I wrote. It's called Elk Shape from a Flatlander's Perspective. And although it doesn't really break down, like, here's what you should do to prepare and these are the workouts you need to do, it just kind of puts it in perspective as far as, you know, hey, what you're going to be going through when you show up to elk hunt. You've driven for, you know, let's say 20 plus hours to get there, or you've flown on a plane. You know, you're running low on sleep, you're excited, and then you get up to, let's say, 10,000 feet. There's less oxygen. You know, it's harder to breathe. You get worn out quickly. Then you're dealing with steep terrain. You know, then your mental game starts kind of sliding. You're like, oh, I'm tired. I'm wore down. I haven't seen anything. You mentally start to slide. So there's all those factors. So you really just need to, you know, get moving, get in shape, whether that's running on a treadmill, whether that's weighting up a pack and going for a couple hikes a week, whether that's, you know, hitting the gym and, you know, doing squats and leg lifts and all that stuff. There's no right or wrong way to do it. And there's no certain, you know, fitness level that you need to be. It's just helping to illustrate that, you know, the more in shape you are, the better prepared you are physically, the more, more enjoyable that hunt is going to be. I've found myself in the last couple seasons that, you know, hey, I haven't been in the best shape possible. And when I hear a bugle 1,000 feet above me, do I have what it takes to get up there and kill that bull? Or am I just going to be like, ah, I can't make it up there. I'm too tired. I'm worn out. You know, I can't go there. So it's really just getting in perspective and talking about any physical movements that you can do leading up to the hunt, you know, 2, 3, 4 months in advance is going to, you know, better prepare you for the mountain.
So how was your first year out there when you, your first year hunting, going from Michigan to Colorado? Was it more than what you expected, or was it kind of, you know, you were prepared for it?
You know, I think living out here full time, you're definitely more acclimated, obviously. But it was kind of a weird scenario. My first elk season, I was actually down in Texas for almost the entire month of August. I left Colorado, I think, like August 1st, and I didn't get back till like August 25th, like the day before opening day. So I was basically a flatlander at that point. I mean, I was gone for almost a month, and so I was acclimated to basically sea level oxygen levels. And so when I came back, and I jumped right into opening weekend for my first elk hunt, which was a backpack style hunt where I went in for a weekend with everything on my back. My ass was kicked for sure that first time, because I was basically, you know, no different than you, or, you know, somebody from Michigan or somebody from, you know, Florida. So I was having to reacclimate myself. So that was pretty tough. But, you know, living here at 7,000-8,000 feet, where I, you know, basically the town I live in, you know, definitely is a lot easier going up to 10,000 feet versus somebody who lives at 500 feet and going to 10,000 feet. So, that definitely helps. But, you know, again, if you are a flatlander or you live at sea level, it just shows you that you do need to be in really good shape because of these variables that you'll get into, and just the physical and, you know, all these factors that go into it. You do have to be prepared.
Yep. So that's me. I'm one of those flatlanders. I'll be coming from Texas. My hunting buddy's coming from Indiana. So we're both in that. I don't know. I think where I'm at in Texas, I'm at about 800 feet. And if I remember right, back in Indiana, I think we're at about 600 or 800. So we'll see. The first couple of days, I know there's going to be an acclimation period. So
yeah, you'll get over it pretty quick. I mean, if you hunt you know, and hike for a couple of days, you'll get acclimated. The biggest thing I tell people is not to push yourself too hard, because you can get really excited. You're like, oh, I want to get up there. I want to go to the highest peak. I want to glass and I want to cover all these miles. And you can on the first day, 'cause you're running on adrenaline and whatever, but you know, you can kind of overdo it sometimes. So I kind of tell people to ease in, you know, don't go crazy gung ho the first couple of days. And then after that, once you've kind of acclimated and, you know, your legs are kind of prepped, then start pounding the mountain and getting aggressive.
Ah, good. I think that's a good tip. That's a really good takeaway. So, okay, moving on. Your last thing that you have on your list here is tools and resources. So this kind of just gathers up a lot of the parks and wildlife, Colorado parks and wildlife stuff that where you pulled your information. You want to hit those real quick?
Yeah, real quick. You know, tools and resources. I just linked to the 2018 Big Game brochure, which talks about all the rules and regulations. You know, again, this is just kind of a piece to kind of put everything in one place and make it easy to access. So that's in there. The Colorado Hunting Atlas, which is basically kind of like the Colorado Parks and Wildlife version of, you know, Google Earth or their mapping system that has all the unit breakdowns. It's got the public lands listed on there. It's got trails, all that stuff. So I linked to that atlas. It's another good digital scouting tool. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has a really, really informative gear list, and they break it down if you're archery hunting, if you're backcountry style hunting, if you're outfitter hunting. You know, they've got these gear lists in there that kind of show you what you need to bring and, you know, must haves to have on your elk hunt. And then I link to Onyx Maps. You know, that's an invaluable resource for me, both, you know, on the computer and in the field as my GPS. So I link to that. And just kind of showcase that a little bit.
Yeah, so I totally agree. All those are good resources, but that Onyx Maps is just incredible. Those guys really got that figured out.
Oh, yeah.
I use it anytime I go for a hike. I'll pre-download the maps and then go to airplane mode just to test it. You know, even if I'm in cell signal range, I'll still put my phone on airplane mode just to see how well the Onyx Maps will track me. And I'm always just blown away. I think that's going to be something that is, well, you said it, invaluable. There's no way you can get away from it. So
that's one piece of gear that you should not have, especially if you don't know the area. You know, shows you all the public land, private land boundaries, topography. You can mark trails in there. You can mark your camp. You can, you know, set waypoints. I would be lost without it. It helps me hunt better. And if you're coming from out of state, don't even question it. Just get Onyx Maps.
Yeah. Agreed. Totally agreed. That pretty much covers the elk hunting guide. And unfortunately for the listeners of the show, I'm not going to link it to the show notes. You got to go to Transition Wild webpage, subscribe, and Adam sends it out to you. It's free.
Just subscribe, put your email in. I won't spam you, I promise.
Yep.
And that gets sent over to you, and you can access it from there.
Yep. And it's very, very good resource. So that's how you get that, and we'll touch that again in the end. I want to move into the layering system, but I have one more question, sort of going back to the important gear. Do you run any sort of GPS satellite in reach type of device?
I don't. You know, some of the areas that I hunt in actually have full cell service, unless you're like down in a basin or, you know, deep drainage. So I've been fortunate enough because of that, and I do have cell service, and I usually hunt with somebody too. So I'm not too worried about it. I've considered it for certain spots, but until I'm like really like back in, you know, miles and miles and miles away for, you know, let's say a week at a time, I'm not really considering it. But it's definitely something that I will have probably eventually. It's not in the cards right now.
Okay. Just curious. So with Onyx Maps, I'm waiting for that map layer to come out that has all the cell phone range and signals. I could see that somewhere in the future. We'll see.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
We'll see. Okay. So moving on into the layering system. So clothing, what you wear, I kind of broke them out into early, mid, and late season. That was just on my notes. If you want to go in a different direction than that, but I think those are the three biggest seasons where people are going to need not necessarily systems, but additions to their base layer. So, can you talk about that, your system that you run?
I run Sika gear, but obviously with any clothing system, whether it's Kuyu or SikSight gear or, Realtree, whatever, Nomad, whatever you run, the importance here is a layering system, right? So, conditions, we have early, mid, and late season, but you also, with the mountains, I mean, in the morning, it can be 30 degrees, and during the daytime it can be 85, and then drops back down cold again in the evening. High elevations, that's just how the weather is, especially when you're in a drier climate. So really the point of this, although I'm using Sika gear, the point is that you should be prepared with a layering systems. And so for example, if we talk about early archery season, I'm going pretty light. And so really I wear a long sleeve. I think Sika, it's like a core lightweight crew long sleeve shirt, and it's a kind of a polyester spandex blend. So it moves with you, it breathes really well. The key there is it doesn't have cotton, so it's gonna wick away moisture. So I wear a long sleeve version of that shirt. They make a short sleeve, but I like the long sleeve because it's gonna keep the sun off you. You're not gonna get sunburned, and then when you're busting through downfall and heavy timber, protects your arms and your body a little bit more. So I wear a that long sleeve shirt, and then honestly, I don't even wear Sika pants the first couple weeks of season. I just wear a lightweight hiking pant because my pants are geared more towards that mid to late season. They're a little on the heavy side, so I just again want something light. If I know the weather's going to be pretty hot and there's not going to be storms rolling through or anything like that, that's pretty much my setup. And then I'll keep a vest in my pack, basically a puffy vest that then I can throw on if I get a little cold. Maybe I'm sitting in the evening over a meadow or a water hole or something. It gets a little chilly, thermals start coming down, and I'll throw that on. But other than that, that's pretty much what I wear for, first into second week of season. And then once we get in kind of more of the middle part of September, early to middle part of September, that's when I'll, put away the hiking pants, and I'll move more towards the my Sika pants that I have. I think I run the mountain pant, which is, not going to be suited for extreme cold, but it's going to get the job done through the rest of the season, even into rifle seasons as well. So I'll run a little bit heavier pant, and then you get into more of your insulation layers. I run a let's see, it's called their Traverse Zip Tee. It's kind of like a quarter zip, not hoodie. It doesn't have a hood on it, but it's a quarter zip long sleeve with a middle weight kind of insulation. So again, it starts to get a little colder. I'll throw that on in accordance with that puffy vest. That works really well. I think it's the Kelvin Light. So I'll run that for more of the mid season. And then later season, I'll definitely have my kind of outer layer shell jacket. I think Sika, it's the Jetstream. There's no insulation there, but it has the wind stopping. That's the main thing. It's water resistant, and it keeps the wind down. So if I'm more late season where I'm dealing with snow and heavier winds and some rain, that's a good jacket, especially if I'm sitting, if I'm not moving around a lot, that works out pretty well. And then obviously I have, early season, I'll wear more of a kind of a cap as far as a, baseball type cap. And then as it gets colder, I'll switch over to a beanie and, wearing my hood a lot more. So that's pretty much it. Again, it's not really about what sort of brand you're using or what you're using in general. It's just, stay away from cotton. you know, have a layering system in mind because of the season variability, because of the temperature fluctuations, because of, you know, rain and snow. You know, you want specific gear that's designed for that style of hunting, especially in the mountains. Not when you have something that's kind of more all purpose or all season, that's where you get into compromises. But if you break it down and get into gear that's really designed for what you're looking to do and it's layered properly, that's where you're going to be, again, most comfortable, and it's going to allow you to hunt better and hunt longer.
Right. Not being brand specific or anything, like you said, it doesn't have to be Sitka or it doesn't have to be Kuyu or First Light or whatever. If you have the opportunity to try on the different clothing, that's a helpful thing too. So I kind of ran into that situation where I tried a couple of different brands and I just didn't like the way the clothes fit.
Yeah.
And it was just, it was kind of uncomfortable for me. And I ended up landing on I wear First Light, but that's just cause I just like the way it fits and it's more comfortable. What else was I? Oh yeah. So that layering I think is really important. And that's something that I've learned through my years in the military, is that layering is absolutely beneficial. So if you're the guy that's sitting in the tree stand out in Michigan or Ohio or Indiana or wherever it is, and you know, you're wearing your coveralls and it's all cotton and fleece or whatever, that stuff's just not going to work out there when you're hiking up those big mountains. Cause as soon as it gets wet, you're done, and it doesn't dry. It doesn't dry out. So that Merino wool is a very impressive fabric. And then some of the polyesters that are coming out, they're all really, really good. So take a look at that, at least for base layer, for sure. You want to get into that stuff. So,
oh yeah.
My hunting partner is a whitetail hunter out in Indiana, and he even runs the full, I think it's First Light also. And he runs that base layer and mid layer and then an outer layer instead of the old school, you know, coveralls and stuff, just because it's a better, more solid system. So,
exactly.
Something to get into for sure.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily, like you said, about the brand. I mean, you know, it's like you said, whatever's comfortable for you, whatever in your, you know, budget, you know, because this stuff's not cheap. There's a lot of factors to consider there, but there's no one right way to do it. There's brand variability across every category as far as your bows, your broadheads, tree stands, you know, whatever. Just do whatever works best for you and whatever you're most comfortable with.
And take your time. I've spent about the better part of a year building up my gear that I have to go out. It's not something you don't have to walk into a Cabela's and drop, you know, your savings on it. Buy a piece every now and then, you know, get something that's going to help. So,
yeah, good tip.
Yeah, cool, Adam. So I have been very curious, what do you have planned though for 2018? What kind of hunts are you working on?
So I'm going to kick things off in Colorado. Obviously I thought about going on a antelope hunt this year. It's just not in the cards for this season. That's probably going to be more of a next year thing, but so I'll be kicking it off in Colorado opening weekend, hunting elk, and then I'll hunt, you know, obviously the rest of the season there. I got Dan Johnson and his buddy Ryan coming out to hunt with me first week of September, so that'll be pretty cool. And then from there, I'm waiting for the leftover draw to come out, in Colorado. So whatever leftover licenses and tags are available, I'll take a look at that. And I really want to get a mule deer tag. So I just put in for preference points on the draw this year, just trying to build the points up a little bit more, so I can get a better unit. 'Cause everything in Colorado for a mule deer is draw. Or you have to buy a leftover. So I'm going to be looking at that list, and I'm hoping to get a second season rifle mule deer tag. I'm going to set the bow down because last year I went all archery tags, and you know how it goes. It's not as easy, right? So I came home with tag soup on all of those hunts, unfortunately. Had a great time doing it, but this year I kind of want to throw a rifle in the mix and try to pick up a mule deer tag somewhere here in Colorado. And then for sure, I'm doing a archery whitetail hunt in Nebraska. That's going to be public land, DIY, a mix of spot and stock, and, you know, tree stand hunting around, you know, some of the river bottom stuff. But that's going to be public, and I'll do that with my buddy, and that'll be a week hunt, probably mid-November. It's kind of what I'm thinking. And the cool thing about Nebraska is that it's all over the counter for non-resident. And tags are pretty cheap too. It's only $250 for a tag. You can also get a mule deer tag. So I'd be interested in that as well. If I maybe saw a mule deer, or, you know, I was in an area where I was seeing some good numbers, I'd pick up a mule deer tag and go that route too. Other than that, I did draw a late season cow rifle tag for here in Colorado, private land. I've been fortunate. I've got some access to some private land here in Colorado. So that starts, let's see, the end of November and actually goes through the end of January. So that would just be a last Hail Mary to throw some meat in the freezer and have a little fun doing it. So that's kind of my plan, starting early with elk, then hopefully a mule deer rifle tag, archery whitetail, and then, you know, rifle cow elk. So that's pretty much it.
You might need to get a few more freezers.
That would be a good problem to have.
Yeah, it would. Hey, so you recently picked up recurve bow, right?
Yeah, I did. Well, I've actually been shooting recurve, kind of got into that in Michigan, 2013, 2014. I only hunted with it like a few times for deer, but I really kind of caught that bug just shooting, you know, 40-pound traditional, you know, older style bear recurve bows, and I really liked it. So when I moved out, I kind of put it down, and I was actually using a friend's bow at the time. So when I moved out, I gave it back. Recently I bought a Hoyt Satori. It's a takedown recurve, pretty badass bow, and I'm getting back into that. You know, really just at this point, I'm just shooting with it just to kind of get the wheels turning and get the form. And then hopefully in a few years, I'll actually start hunting deer or, you know, potentially elk with it. But it's another arsenal, another kind of rabbit hole that I'm getting myself into as far as the archery world, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking at that same rabbit hole and debating on whether or not of going in it. So do you shoot instinctive or gap shooting with yours?
It's more of a gap shooting. So I'm just kind of referencing the end of the arrow to, you know, my target location and kind of going from there. So, and I shoot three fingers under, I shoot with tabs. You know, there's a bunch of variables to it, and it's so hard to be consistent, especially when you come back from compound hunting. You know, there's your draw length, your, you know, where your location is, your fingers, your release, all that stuff. It's just crazy, but it's so much fun. It feels like I'm new to archery again, all over. So if you haven't had a chance to kind of shoot a recurve bow, I recommend it, because it's just something new. It feels like you're a kid again.
Yeah, I've got I really want to try it out. I've got a friend of mine that picked it up, I think about 2 years ago, and we were out at the archery range, and I was shooting compound, you know, and just bullet holes, you know, just nailing the target and small groups, and he was having a heck of a time and trying to do instinctive shooting, and I just kept thinking, like, why would you do that when you have these compound bows that are so accurate? But we left, and that dude was just as happy as I was, and he had just as much fun, so...
Yeah,
I think I'm going to check it out one of these days.
But definitely have to. Yeah. Even don't plan on like hunting with it initially, just get one, you know, you can buy $100 recurve. I bought $100 bear recurve at a pawn shop and got it strung up, and, you know, for a couple $100, I just start shooting targets, and it's fun. You know, again, it's a whole different ball game, and something if you start doing now, maybe when we're, you know, older and we've got a couple more animals on the ground, a couple more on the wall, then you can start making it a little harder.
Yeah, right, when you just don't care anymore, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, I appreciate you coming on. Before I let you get off of here, you want to leave all your contact info and websites and all that stuff where people can look you up and find your elk hunting guide and gear list and stuff?
Yeah, so check out transitionwild.com. From there, you can go to the contact page if you want to shoot me an email. I'm always happy. I get a lot of people emailing me, you know, hey, what's your thoughts on this? Or, you know, I'm also open to suggestions on what you want to hear, you know, maybe from the podcast, or what, you know, articles or videos you want want me to kind of put out. So I urge people to, you know, go to the website, send me a contact, fill out the contact form, and, you know, start a conversation, because I love hearing from everybody from all over the country, and I love to help out as well. Always happy to pass along any information that I have or what I can do to kind of help you out. So I urge people to do that. And yeah, if you subscribe on transitionwild.com, you know, again, I'll send you that Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide for free. And, you know, obviously a majority of what this podcast has been talked about, but, you know, very valuable resource in my opinion to kind of get you off and running. So do that. And then, from there, I mean, I'm on Facebook at Transition Wild, Instagram, Transition Wild. Got a YouTube channel. You can subscribe there as well. Been kind of slacking on the videos over the last, like, I don't know, 6 months, but, you know, now's the time of year where I'm starting to kind of put out some more video content and product reviews and, you know, more, as much information as I can. So, yeah, urge people to reach out. And again, hopefully you guys can learn something from this and, you know, get some takeaways to kind of learn from my struggles and failures and you know, apply it to your own hunt. So that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Adam. So one thing I wanted to touch on really quick is your YouTube page. You recently put out, I think in the last week or two, some videos where you kind of do like a Google Earth, or is it Onyx Maps? I don't remember which one it is, but you talk about contour lines and how to look for terrain features with using those contour lines in the maps. And then you actually, you take that map and then you go out into the woods to the exact location that you were scouting, and you kind of show what the contour lines look like in real life. And that was, I think that's pretty cool, because nobody really does that. Everybody jumps on the internet and they jump on Google Earth and they say, this is what you need to look for. And they tell people where to go and what hunting should look like from a satellite view perspective. And you actually go out there and you say, this is what you need to look for. This is a bench. This is a meadow. This is what it looks like. So yeah. Really cool videos. So check those out. And like Adam said, they're on his YouTube page, Transition Wild. So make sure you check those out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what it's about. I mean, it's just a 2-part elk scouting series where the first part is me, you know, walking you through using Google Earth and Onyx Maps. And like you said, Chad, you know, showing you what to look for. And the reason I'm able to do that too, is I'm actually showing you, you know, spots that I've been to before. You know, obviously, you know, I'm not going to show you the exact location or how to get there, but like the reason I can pinpoint this and I can show you these spots is because I've actually hunted those spots and I've seen, you know, bulls bedded on these benches. I've seen bulls, you know, feeding in these meadows. I've seen them use this terrain a certain way because I've actually been out there hunting. So then I can break it back down to the computer, show you, you know, here's where I've had encounters. Here's what I've had success. This is where I'm getting into elk, and these are the reasons why. And then, you know, in the reason why they're there is because there's close food, there's close water, there's north facing slopes, there's travel corridors, it's high elevation, they're secluded, you know, all these different things. So don't mean to rant about that, but you know, it's good information. Again, if you're new and you don't know where you're going or you don't know what to look for, those videos are pretty invaluable.
Yeah, I appreciate them. So Adam, thank you very much. I look forward to hearing more come around late December, maybe early January, about your whirlwind of animals that you're going to chase around. So we'll try to link up again maybe late or early next year and see how your season went.
Yeah, man, same to you. Thanks for having me on, and good luck to your Colorado elk hunt as well. Looking forward to following along with that and hopefully see you with a elk on the ground here come September.
Man, I hope so. I don't care what it is. I'm not so going back to your elk hunting guide. I'm not the guy that's looking chasing a 350 bull, just chasing an elk, and I don't care what it is. So, meat in the freezer.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, man. Well, thanks. Just wanted to say thanks to Adam for coming on. Make sure you go over and subscribe to Transition Wild on his webpage. There's a link in the description if you want it. If you go over, you subscribe, you'll get that 2018 Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide. I highly recommend it. A lot of good stuff in there. Pretty much cover everything we talked about today. So jump over there and check it out. The next show coming up will be pretty fun. It's going to be myself and my hunting partner, Neil. He's going to come on. You guys haven't heard from him yet, so it'll be kind of neat to get him on. We're going to talk about just expectations and anticipations for the upcoming hunt and run through a little bit of Neil's gear, some of the fine-tuning stuff that I've done on my gear toward the end here. So should be pretty cool. Make sure you check that one out. It actually, so when that show is published and when it airs, we will be, that's day one of our hunt. So it'll be pretty cool. When you guys are listening to it, we're going to be out there chasing some elk around. So wish us luck. And finally, thanks to Sportsman's Nation for having us on the podcast network, and appreciate it. Thanks, Dan. Out of here.